Gay Mormon Stories is a production of Mormon Stories and the Open Stories Foundation. To support this podcast, please donate today at gaymormonstories.org. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer Mormons. And thanks for listening.
Okay, so we've got you both now in Illinois, both established in your career, but Karen, you came there to go to school in Champaign. Now, Tanya, were you at this point living in Champaign-Urbana, or did you decide to go to school too, or what kind of got you guys in the same place at the same
time? I was also a student in the same doctoral cohort at the U of I, so we were... We actually met because we were starting our doctoral program at the same time.
Okay, so you decided to go back to school twice.
Yes.
Okay, great. So, well, let's hear about it. Why don't you guys just both, I think we know your voices well enough that you could just really both talk interchangeably without me assigning.
Karen, I think you should go with this because you tell this story pretty well.
Okay. I've seen that smile somewhere before.
Has Tanya already seen Seth?
I have. Recently, I have.
Because I tried to get Diego to watch it. Big fail. He lasted 20 minutes and said, nope. And I was trying to, recapturing those, you know, teenage emotions I felt. And he was just thinking it was horrible. He didn't get it. But anyway. That's an aside. Okay. So.
Yeah. So she knows it well enough that I can start singing that and she'll go, oh, stop. Okay. So, no, really, it was one of those strangers across a crowded room. And I'm not going to start singing anymore, but...
oh, you can.
It was our first day of graduate assistant training. So it was before classes had started and all of the grad students were together, maybe 7,000 there. This was a university-wide meeting.
Okay.
And we walked into Fullinger Hall. I walked in. Tanya was already there, and she was probably 20 people in line in front of me. I'm still closeted to myself. I'm still trying to make... believe that I just have to practice enough and work it and, you know, against all things gay. And so I walk in and I see her and I look at her. She was looking kind of butch. she had a really short haircut and was in a rough point of her life.
Oh, yes.
Is that fair to
yes.
say, Tanya? And so she looked kind of tough. Not dressed tough. She dressed really nice, and she still does. But there was this toughness about her, yet, and here's where you get kind of spiritual, there was this connection immediately with us, and it was, this is so cliche, but what else do you do? I just felt her so strongly to the point that my closeted self just swept in like this big claw that said, don't you dare. Stop that now. That's a lesbian. Get away. You know, and
now
and
this
so
was
I,
in a context of a large meeting, so you didn't even know she was going to be in your program.
Not yet.
No, I didn't know. I mean, she could have been in sociology or chemistry or anything, you know.
Okay.
And here she was, just you know, in this crowded room, and yeah. I see her, and I'm just like, whoa, no, don't do that. She's a lesbian, you know. And so, of course, I'm staring at her with this disdain, this feigned disdain while we're in this line, just getting in there. And, of course, maybe an hour later when we go into smaller cohorts and meet with everyone else, she's introduced. And there she is. And I'm like, oh, there she is. And, you know, it's all in this disguised, oh, that awful person, you know, and at the same time, I can't keep my eyes off of her.
Uh-huh.
And she's introduced by someone else and I'm, you know, introduced so that I knew she was a lesbian. And I was like, see, I told you. And so then we I don't know if you want to add anything to that day, Tanya, or if I should continue.
Well, just a little bit of background about where I was. I was still with a previous partner at that time, but our relationship was very strained. My partner wasn't happy that I was going to school. She wasn't supportive of that at that time. And so that's kind of where the toughness, the defensiveness, kind of where I was just about ready to go through that midlife crisis I was talking about earlier. So a lot in my life was not working. And so I was kind of acting tough, but really I was quite in a vulnerable place emotionally myself. So I was just my exterior.
And did you get the same awareness of her presence when she came? Did you not notice her yet?
I think, really caught up in my own stuff at that point. I still consider myself in a relationship because I was. So I wasn't as aware of other people around me at the time. And I think that was good because I needed to take care of those issues. That was first priority. At that point. Yeah. But I did, of course, I remember meeting Karen the very day that she's speaking of. I remember having lunch with her and the others in our cohort, and I remember her from that time quite well.
Okay.
So
probably because you're a vegetarian and I was eating steak out of a bag.
Yes, yeah, that's one of the reasons.
You're such a Mormon, Karen.
I found that.
You're such a Mormon, Karen, eating steak out of a
sorry?
Bag. That's such a Mormon thing to do. Eat steak out of a bag. I don't know. That strikes me as being very Mormon.
Just pull it out of my year supply.
Right? Oh, goodness.
Or maybe I'm just making up. I don't know.
Oh, that's great.
No, it's because Mormons, for as progressive as they might be, it never occurs to them to be vegetarians, ever.
Even though the word of wisdom.
Even though the word of wisdom. Yeah, we both go there. The word of wisdom.
Anyway.
You would think.
We skip
think,
over that part.
But anyway. Nope. Okay. Okay, so anyway, let's go back into your narrative.
Okay.
Karen, and so you did meet her later. And
right, and we were in a class together, just one class per semester. And, of course, I was just there that first year and then had planned to go back to my school teaching job.
Uh-huh.
And so that first year, we were in a philosophy class together. And it was kind of a seminar. There were, maybe 8 of us in that class?
Roughly.
I'm trying to remember. So all sitting around a table together sharing ideas, and it became clear to me very quickly that she was brilliant and that she had these ideas that were not your, I don't know how else to say this, besides your Sunday school answers, your boxed answers that you expected people to say, even in academia. She was thinking outside of the box in ways that no one else was, and it completely intrigued me. Yet we didn't talk at all outside of class that first semester. And that second semester, we had another class together. That was a psychology class. And again, the same thing. And then suddenly it became clear one day, one of the two of us, I can't remember, started talking, dared mention the word spirituality in an academic situation, which is just you don't do. And one of the two of us, I can't remember which, but we kind of, there was this moment of where time stopped. And I was like, you just mentioned something spiritual and you're a lesbian, you know, and this just this, you know, it was, I don't even know how to explain it, but I was just all of a sudden, you know, the lights focus right in on her. And I'm like, what is this? Who is this person? And and so do you want to
add anything?
Well,
I just thought you were angry at me because I thought you thought that I was being irreverent somehow because you were so intense in that moment. I do remember that. And it was a puzzle to me. I'm like, what are they saying? You know? But
how dare you mess with my world?
Oh, well, okay. Too bad.
Yeah. Well, and at the same time, I was so attracted to you, but couldn't go there. And so whenever I'm that way, whenever I'm holding back emotion, it becomes angry. It becomes stiff. And I think that was that same thing, is I couldn't just softly say, wow, how insightful. But it had to be, who do you think you are? Mm. You know?
I see.
So I was still extremely active at church, And I think I'm trying to remember what my calling was. Oh, I was Sunbeam teacher that year. Oh, it was so wonderful. That's another story. But we had, I can't remember what you call it, but one of those months where we were supposed to invite someone to church. And I all of a sudden just thought I'd pray really hard and see if I could find someone to invite to church. And so I found my person. I just thought, okay, I'm going to invite this person from our cohort to church. And Tanya and I still had never really talked outside of class, except for one day that I wanted to engage in feminist conversation with her outside of class.
Uh-huh.
And she basically just looked at me like, you're a weirdo. And walked away.
You guys are just off on good feet.
Well, I think really... I was confused by that because knowing that Karen was LDS, I assumed a certain level of conservatism, and it wasn't making she wasn't being congruent, and I didn't quite know what to make of it. So that's probably why that was my reaction.
Yeah. And that very theme continues for the next several years, as you'll see, that Tanya couldn't make sense of me because I wasn't ever being congruent. I had these two sides of myself that were warring against each other, and they would both pop out at different mm-hmm. times. And that was very hard for Tanya and very hurtful for Tanya. But anyway, we'll get there. So I, for some reason, I wanted to see if Tanya could help me with an assignment in class. And so I emailed her about something. And I don't know how much you want to share here, Tanya, but she kind of opened up to me about how things were in her life at that point. Said, I'm trying to open up and find some friends that I can trust to talk to. And I shut down the email and picked up my scriptures to do my scripture reading and just felt this, you need to, Tanya's the one. And it wasn't Tanya's the one you're going to marry. It was Tanya's the one to invite to church.
Oh.
I'm like, so I had this little moment like, are you serious? What? Okay, she's a lesbian. She's not going to join the church. And so I am still in this, I'm going to convert the world mode in my life. That one side of me is like, oh, I'm just going to convert everybody. And, you know, and I'm like, but not her because she's gay and they are evil, you know. And yet I was so confused by all of this because she was such a spiritual person.
Yeah.
And, you know, I couldn't make sense of all of this, just like she couldn't make sense of me. So I said this out loud even, okay, I'm not going to invite her to church, but I will be her friend. I'm going to stop completely avoiding talking to her. Okay. I will be her friend. And perhaps, you know, somehow I can bring her to God, I'm saying to myself in this proselyting tone.
And during this time period, things were getting... my relationship was coming to an end, and I needed to reach out to members of the cohort for support. And so I was reaching out to Karen and to other people that are now really good friends of ours for emotional support through a transition. And it was probably a few months later when I eventually left that partner and her daughter, and that family dissolved. Okay. So I was open then also at that particular moment to reaching out and building a different network of friends, because I knew in a way I was going to be building a new life, that many of the people that I had known in the past, it was like I was going through a period of rapid change inside of myself. And a lot of the people that I had been friends with and hung out with just weren't working anymore. I wasn't congruent with my old life, and I was moving into a new phase. And so, you know, Karen was one person that I was working on building friendships with. So that's maybe what she was feeling or sensing, perhaps.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So we gradually became closer friends, first through email and then over the phone. And of course, I left Illinois that summer and moved back to Utah, where I was teaching one final year in the
public
schools.
Which was a lovely, safe distance uh-huh. for both of us.
It really was, because we could develop a friendship that wasn't weird. I guess it's still, you know, I was still not being honest. But at the same time, we were able to just talk and develop a good, close relationship. And we, you know, we went from maybe one email a day, one short email a day to by the end of that year. And you had, of course, left your partner by this mm-hmm. point when we started to really become close. But by the end of the year, we were talking 3 hours a mm-hmm. night and then emailing several times a day. Wow. And I was getting really scared at this point. And by January of that year, of that school year, I was serving as primary president at the time. And just, if I've ever had a point in my life where I was full of conflict, it was that, because I was doing everything possible, so full of spirit, so full of light, yet knowing how attracted I was to her and how much I loved her, and also knowing how spiritual our connection was. And we talked about serving and divine connection, and there was nothing evil about it. It was just so pure and wonderful and fulfilling.
Yeah.
And I couldn't make sense of that because it wasn't at all what I had been taught. And on my birthday, I went to see the stake president about something else. And he took me, we were sitting there in this chat, and he said, "How's your same-sex attraction?" And I said, "My what?" And he said, "How's your same-sex attraction?" I said, "Oh, and then he said, "Remember when you, years ago, when I was your bishop, we talked about that." And I was like, oh, I'd conveniently forgotten about all of this, you know, that I had told him. And so I said, "Well, no, it's not a problem. No problem at all. I do happen," and I'm feeling this inside of myself, and I'm like, yeah. Okay, be honest. And I said, "I do have a friend, and she happens to be a lesbian, but we have a very spiritual relationship, and it's the same kind of spiritual relationship that I've had with women all my life. There's nothing else to it." And unlike any of the bishops in the past, he looked me right in the eyes and said, "Do you have fantasies about more with her?" And I was like, oh, because in that moment I had to own that I had to own my whole self in a way that I never had before. And so I said, "Yes." And he said, "You need to never see her again." And I said, "What?" And he said, "Just plan on meeting her in the next life. And you can hook up again and have a good friendship in the next life, but this is not going to work for you." And I think one thing that might be different is this was maybe 20 years after when I had talked to bishops before. And yeah. I think there's more of a realization that, yes, I might have same-sex attraction in a way that bishops before that never could fathom. And so he was on to that, and you know, I said, "But we're going to a conference in Europe together." And he said, "No, you're not." and just completely, this was my birthday. I was devastated. I went home from this meeting, and we had a big family dinner there in Utah, and I just couldn't eat a single bite. I was just so devastated. And I didn't know what else to do because, of course, I had to obey, right? You know, I mean, there was no other option in my mind except to obey. But yet at the same time, there was no other option in my soul but to be with Tanya because I was so complete with her.
Right.
So that was an extremely difficult time in my life. I called Tanya that night and said, you know, I had planned to go out to Illinois for a award ceremony, and I was going to stay with Tanya. And I said, "I'm sorry, I can't stay with you, and I can't go to Rome with you." And of course, she knew exactly what had just happened.
Right.
And I wasn't very honest with you even then.
No, it wasn't until a couple of years later I learned what he had actually said.
Yeah, I just tried to make it some sort of coincidence that I had just been to see the stake president, and I felt that I couldn't do these things with you, and you know,
right?
But yeah, right. And I can't hold anger against him. He was doing what he was taught,
right?
And so I don't go there. Although it is very painful, even to this day, to think about how hard that was and how I had to be torn in two in that moment. And I did for 2 weeks not talk to you. I can't remember exactly what happened, but it just, oh, I know what happened. I mentioned to him that we were colleagues in the same field, in the same department, in the same program, and it was impossible for me not to talk to you.
Yeah.
And he said, well, then what you need to do is you need to set up rules. Of course, I've been doing those rules for 20 years at this point. You need to set up rules, and you need to have people that you share every detail of your relationship with Tanya with. So you're completely open about it. So I picked two people, a friend and a family member, and told them the situation. Of course, both of them felt the same way I did, that maybe I just needed to work hard enough and I'd get over this. And so for the next 2 years, Tanya and I were in this push and pull kind of relationship where we kind of backed off on how close we were in a way, yet continued to be spiritually close. And it was a really painful push and pull. Do you want to add anything, Tanya, before I come back to Illinois?
I think you've pretty much covered. I mean, it really was a back and forth. I would describe interactions with Karen. It was like there were two of her. You know, I knew kind of what was going on with her because I'd gone through that same sort of there were two of me before experience. But yeah. She would have this completely different energy when she was talking to me naturally. And that's the energy that she's sharing for the most part on this conversation. But then there'd be these other moments where the turbo LDS person would kick in, and it was all, you know, everything was, she would communicate to me these same messages over and over again, like scripts, and she would have this very uptight, nervous energy, and I could just sense when she would go back and forth between these two halves of herself. And that was painful because I knew the real Karen, the genuine one, the one I sensed that was all there, and then this constricted one. And it was like I was on a teeter-totter going back and forth.
But you guys weren't openly discussing the relevance of your LDS faith in the context of your friendship.
Yes, at moments. In fact, Prop 8 happened during part of that time, which was a very problematic couple of discussions for us. It was very difficult.
Uh-huh.
But no, actually, we did talk quite a lot about, Karen was educating me at that time a lot about the church and what her beliefs were. That did help me somewhat to understand what was going on, but later, I'm jumping ahead just a little bit, but when she came back to Illinois after that year in Logan of teaching to come back and complete her degree, and I actually attended sacrament meeting and Relief Society and to try to understand what was going on with her, because it didn't make a lot of there were things that just didn't make sense about what was going on, and I wanted to kind of understand what was causing her to be so conflicted. So
Tanya joined the ward choir.
Oh, okay.
She was a member of the choir for an entire year, I think, or was it 2 years? No, it was one year.
And it was during the Prop 8 time. And I did that intentionally because I guess I had done enough of my own therapy and my own personal spiritual development myself to realize that if I didn't go and learn to know other LDS people besides Karen, it would be really easy for me to just hate all LDS people because of Prop 8. And I didn't want to do that because I knew that that was me rejecting a part of myself kind of in a spiritual sense. But, you know, if I was othering other people, I knew that othering is not spiritually good for me. And so I knew that I couldn't do that. So I thought, I'm just going to learn. I'm going to go. I'm going to sing with people and make music with people so that I can see people as humans and see them as whole people who happen to have this belief, instead of just, these people have this belief and that's awful. How could they think that? So, and that was really helpful for me, and it wasn't easy, but it did open my eyes and help me understand the culture a lot more that way. And I'm glad I did that.
But I suspect a lot of things were familiar based on your own religious community. I mean, was it really drastically different than the kind of constraints you might have felt in your own religion?
A couple of things that were different is I would say that it's much more paternalistic. It's a much more of a top-down structure. Women have always had more of a role, a more equal role in my religion. Although certainly there's women's work and men's work, and there are still, you know, gender distinctions, but that's blurred and it has continued to become more equal over time as certainly in my lifetime. But I thought that that was very, the men only having priesthood was very different for me. The other thing that was very different was the level and degree of which doctrine had everything spelled out. Every verse of scripture kind of had an interpretation, and this, how everyone was agreeing on interpretations of what certain scriptures meant. And that blew my mind. I couldn't understand, because I always come from a situation where people would have discussions about the potential meanings of scripture instead of this is what the scripture means. And it just seemed like there was an answer for everything. And at one point I was like, wow, that's really kind of, I could see how there's, that's very attractive, because there's a certain level of peace in thinking that there's one right answer. But that I realized that, wow, that's also very limiting too, because there could be multiple right answers or multiple right ways of looking at that at different points in one's lifetime as one develops over time, having different deepening levels of spiritual understanding. So for me, that seems kind of strange. And it was a little troubling, actually, because I felt like, how can you grow in having deeper understandings if there's one right way to interpret a scripture? And so that was puzzling to me. But at the same time, it helped me understand why Karen was having trouble negotiating some very strict guidelines, some very strict interpretations of things. There wasn't any room for, yeah, right, at all. And so that, you know, that was a very different experience for me.
Okay. And during all this, you guys were having a fairly intense friendship.
Mm-hmm.
But during this time, Tanya, were you kind of hoping that Karen was going to kind of emerge out of this and be available? Were you seeing a potential life partner there?
Well, I think, yes, I could tell that she was going back and forth. I didn't know if she would ever come out. I mean, it was a long time that we were friends. I mean, wow. And there were moments where that was particularly frustrating, but other times where there was something compelling that I knew, like I couldn't let it go. And it wasn't like some sort of sick compulsion, like, oh, I have to have this person love me. There was some deep spiritual connection. Like, it was like, I knew that we were supposed to do something together. And so since we were in the same profession, I thought, well, either, you know, I certainly know that I had feelings for her, but I thought, well, maybe that's not what it is. Maybe what this is that we are to work together and we are supposed to do some sort of, you know, career work together. And that's why we have this intense spiritual connection. So I was trying to, one part of me is like, no, that can't be what it is. It's got to be more than that. But the other part of me, at least when things weren't going well, I was like, well, maybe it's just that. Maybe that's, we have to have some sort of deep spiritual connection because of the type of work we'll be doing with our career.
You were trying to put meaning on it, but was this the kind of connection you'd never had with somebody else before?
Oh, definitely.
Or would you say that?
Yeah. I wasn't open to that kind of connection with anyone before, because I remember I was walling that part of myself off and pretending it didn't exist. So even though I was with others that who perhaps may have been capable of having a spiritual connection with me, I was not available that way for them. And so, because I wasn't available to my own spiritual self, I was completely disconnected. There was one point I was so angry at the divine, so to speak, that I just didn't want to even believe I had a soul. I was that angry. Uh-huh. And I don't have that view now. I, of course, I define a lot of those terms differently at this point in my life than I did then. But, you know, I was really... I had a lot of internal self-loathing that was, which made spiritual connection with other people very problematic or impossible.
Yeah. But meanwhile, you know, there's a couple of years here in limbo where you're having this intense connection with someone, but were you also sort of part of the lesbian community?
Oh, yes.
Were you involved with the graduate students? Were you dating other women? Were, you know, was...
Well, I was actually a music instructor for a lesbian feminist chorus in town. And so, I mean, I'd been out for years, so I didn't really know how to be anything but out, really, at that point. And so, yeah, I went on with that part of my life, and I certainly didn't step into the closet. Even when I went to sacrament meeting, I went as myself. And I think a lot of people there knew about that part of my life. I know that the bishop did.
Uh-huh.
At least there.
Okay.
And so you know, I know I went on with that. And there was one moment that I did actually, that when Karen and I would say, we, even though we weren't in a relationship, we kind of broke up. I remember there was this point where I asked Karen, I'm like, are you sure that our relationship isn't this? And she said, absolutely not. It can't be that. It isn't this. And so I said, all right. So I knew I kind of like, all right, I need to move on, because it was kind of driving me a little bit crazy at that point. And I did start to try to date at that point. And I tried dating someone, which was an unfortunate thing for me to do, actually, because, you know, honestly, that was probably very hurtful to the person I dated, because I wasn't dating that person as much out of interest for that person as more than a friendship. I was just trying to get over Karen, which never, it didn't work, of course.
Okay, so you guys are both going through some intense emotions around this. Mm-hmm. I mean, some intensity.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so proceed then.
You pick it up, Karen.
All right. this was, I ended up being in Illinois 3 more years after that year back in Utah. And the first year we were quite close friends. I talked with the bishop there and said, I have this friendship. He said, it's always good to have close, intimate friends, you know, the same story. And so I just told Tanya that, you know, I needed to keep these rules. And of course, as soon as I told her that, she's like, straight women do not.
Well, I didn't rules. Say that.
She didn't
yeah.
say this to me. She didn't say this to me. She's like, really, Karen? But, you know, I'm just like, okay, well, we just have to have these rules. We can do this, but not this. And, you know, I'll touch your hand, but I won't clasp fingers with you. You know, all these different silly rules that I was trying to keep. And, of course, no kissing whatsoever. So we kept those for that first year. And then that was at the end of that school year. That's when she started dating this person. And I was devastated beyond devastation. I mean, you just, And so here I am, these two parts of me that are at war, and I'm just thinking, wait, but this doesn't fit with the plan, because, you know, we have to be close, but here you are doing this. And so, of course, I'm saying to her, okay, call me as soon as you get home from your date. I want to hear every detail.
Right.
So that didn't work out very well. And then it just got to be too much. And we tried for a month just to not even talk to each other. And that was probably the lowest point I've ever been. I was suicidal at that point, and we have a mutual friend who kind of saw us through all of this. And I remember one day being out in the car and thinking, if I go up, I know how I'm going to end my life. And so I sat in the car for a good 20 minutes or maybe an hour, I don't know, until I figured out a way that I could get upstairs without ending my life. And that was to call this friend. And I got upstairs, turned on Skype, and I thought, oh, she's not on. And immediately, within 30 seconds, this friend got on Skype, just out of the blue.
Wow.
And so I chatted with her. She worked me through it. And then we kind of, Tanya and I gradually were able to work out a friendship again while she was dating this other person. And so that was just kind of, it was more of a casual friendship at that point. I developed friendships with other, you know, with a gay guy that I was working with at school, and had started to develop friendships with people outside of the church, and was realizing that they weren't fitting the stereotype that I've been told, that they were spiritual people, that they were honest people, that they were serving and loving and true to themselves in a way that maybe I had never allowed myself to be. Uh-huh. And this was a great learning stage for me while Tanya was dating this woman, for me to step out and expand and learn a lot about life and just get outside of my bubble, because yeah. I was so hurt, I was willing to do this. And by January of that school year, Tanya broke up with this person. And we decided, Tanya, I don't know, I'm talking a lot here. If you want to add anything, please do. She had decided she needed to go to Boston for a year and started planning this move that she was going to make. And I was encouraging her because it just felt so right for her to go and do this program. And so we realized we only had 5 or 6 months together in the same place. And so we just said, okay, forget all of this stupid back and forth stuff. Let's just be friends and have a fun blast together every day. And so we made a list of things that we would do that were fun together. And so we just started checking off our list. And if I started getting hurtful to Tanya, she'd back off. And then I'd bring up the list and say, no, the snow is melting and we have a snowman on here. We only have one clump of snow, so we're going to make a foot-tall snowman together and stick it in your freezer.
Which we did. And it's just crazy. A lot of fun.
Because we had to check everything off that list. And so, you know, so in this time, we're again developing another aspect of our relationship. We have the spiritual aspect already, and now we're developing this fun, playful, just carefree part of our relationship that we've been able to keep since then. But we just kept this, you know, and it was fun for all that time.
Yeah.
And then she got ready to move. She was packing up. She was getting ready to leave. And the depression set in for me again because I realized she's really doing this. She's really leaving my life. And I went back to Utah and Idaho for the summer. I was teaching in a music camp, and I spent some time with my family. We had a family reunion. I had, during this time that Tanya was dating this woman, gone to the church addiction recovery program to get over Tanya. That was my plan. I was just going to do the 12 steps.
In and, Champaign or?
Yeah, in the area. It was okay. In Illinois. It wasn't the Champaign one, but it was one. Purposely, because I was Young Women President. And I didn't want to be going to addiction recovery as Young Women President.
Okay.
Because, you know,
So you went to the next takeover.
Right. Okay. Pretty much. Yeah. So where I thought no one would know me, and it's still a small world, but that worked quite well. And that was such a beautiful experience. So many people who completely brought their souls there. And again, here I was with people who would be considered sinners, yet who were so real and so close to God. And again, it was messing with this worldview I had because I was seeing real life in a raw way that I never had before.
And these were Mormons who were participating in the addiction recovery.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It was all an LDS addiction recovery. And we never said exactly what we were there for. I mean, we could, but we didn't need to. But so no one knew I was there to get over a woman, okay. You know, but that was my approach. And so I went through this process. And it was so good for me. Of course, that didn't change who I was. So when you talk about reparative therapy, maybe that's the closest I've come, yeah. but nothing compared to what some people have done. But so then when Tanya was getting ready to leave for Boston that summer, I decided to pick up the book again and do it for a second time on my own. So I started doing all of the exercises and reading again. And I got to step 4, where you do a searching moral inventory of yourself. And I said, okay, I have to be real. And then, you know, the next step is to confess this. And there I was, you know, at this camp. Tanya had been maybe 6 months since she'd been with this woman, and another woman started showing interest in her. And here I was at this camp on the phone with her, seeing how things were going, and she told me that this was happening. And I just got crazy, jealous, angry, upset. And I think at that moment, Tanya, you knew without a doubt. And I think I even said, you know, something like, well, you know, you are really attractive. It's not a surprise. And you're like, they're dead silence on the phone. And then all of course, this other Mormon side of me comes out and I said, I'm sorry, did I say something wrong? Are you okay?
Yes, that's a classic case of the back and forth. Yes.
So anyway, the next morning I realized I needed to completely surrender everything. And here I am following the 12 steps and realizing I have to surrender everything to find the truth and to follow who I am supposed to be. And in this very spiritual place, and with all the everything in my soul, I said, okay, I surrender everything. Everything is on the table. And, you know, I'd been temple going for, I don't even know how many years at this point, but weekly or biweekly or, you know, at least once a month, you know, if nothing more than that. And, I mean, it was a part of my life. And I said, I will surrender everything to know the truth, to be free of this. And I had for the last 2-3 years been in such a state of just, you know, depression, suicidal tendency or ideation, and just obsessive, you know, the going back and forth in my mind. I mean, I had tried everything. I put scriptures in my shower in a Ziploc bag because I wanted to just completely, you know, force this. And so here I was at this moment saying, I give up. I completely give up. I surrender everything. Tell me the truth. And I knew, of course. And so I called Tanya on the phone and I said, Tanya, you're the person I'm choosing to confess to. There's 5% or was it 1%,
you said one.
Tanya? There's a 1% chance I might be gay. And I am going to completely, big shock. I am going to completely open myself up to see if that is true. And I don't know where this will lead me, but I'm walking into it. And then I came back to Illinois where Tanya and I were together.
Can I stop for a second, though? And
yeah.
The reason I bring this up is because in a day or two, I'm putting something on No More Strangers blog about the way to ask a question of God. And I just want to ask in the context, since you're talking about this very thing, right? Because we have that scripture in James that really got Joseph Smith to pray, right?
Uh-huh.
That if any of you lack wisdom. And so I looked at that and said, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not. Now, the upbraideth is important because we have to realize that God isn't going to get angry at us for asking this question. But it also means a little more than that. It just means that he doesn't reject us at all, really. But even if you try to just put it in the context of asking the question, he's certainly saying, yes, any question is a fair question. Any question is a valid question, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's no wrongness in asking because
right.
You lack the wisdom and God will not upbraid and it will be given. But then the next verse was a little confusing to me, but it said, let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. For he that wavereth is like a wave of sea driven with the wind and tossed. Now, Mormons take that as to believe, oh, we have to have faith that the church is true and therefore we have to be totally not wavering that the church is true when we ask God if the church is true. However,
right.
I'm not quite reading that there. I'm reading that what the faith is the faith is that we have to trust in God so much that we have to do what you did. We have to put everything on the table. We have to say, well, I'm willing to give up everything. I'm willing to accept whatever answer you're going to give me. I need to be able to say, I will put aside, in this case, I will put aside my sexual orientation, but I will also put aside the church if that's what the answer is, right? You have to be open 100% to God's answer. Is that first saying that to you? Because that's sure saying that to me. That
you're right.
Be open to the answer. And the answer has to include possibilities that you weren't willing to consider or that you might not want to consider.
Or that are inconvenient or uncomfortable or scary. And I think that's what faith means in that, you know, you're right. We're taught that everything has to fit inside of this structure. But in truth, it's really faith that divine guidance knows better than our ego. And I think that's what we're letting go of. And the wavering is our mind coming in and saying, but what if? And that's what we're really letting go of.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes.
Tanya, did you have a comment?
Well, I was just, yeah, that if you believe that with God all things are possible, you have to really open up to the infinite amount of possibilities there really are. And most of the time, our ego limits us to a couple of two or three choices when there could be an infinite number of ways that we could go. And we have a very limited view. So if we're not open to anything and being directed to do anything, whether we understand it or not, we are blocking the guidance that we would get when we ask that question.
Well, and it's even like if we take the example of Joseph Smith, I mean, what was his answer? His answer was an answer that surprised him. It was, you're not supposed to join any church. Now, that was probably, you know, anyone in any one of those churches would have said, well, that's obviously not the right answer. But that's the answer he felt he got. And it was a surprising answer. It must have surprised his family, you know. But he had to be open enough to get an answer like that, or he wouldn't have got it, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
So to me, that also points to what the scripture is saying. But I think when we, as Mormons a little bit, we tend to do it backwards. We tend to say, this is the answer. Please, Father, tell me that this answer is, you know, please confirm that this answer is right, and I'll stay on my knees until that happens. And if it doesn't happen, it's because Satan is tempting me, and therefore I need to have more faith and sin less. And
well, yeah.
And so how are you going to get a real answer that way?
Right. And that's kind of, you know, the Doctrine and Covenants. Study it out in your mind and then ask God if it's right. So you're supposed to do that, well, that homework first.
Yeah, but can I you don't study both sides right. of the issues, perhaps? Or just study include fairly. Also give it a fair assessment of all of the data?
Well, the problem
exactly,
is...
Exactly, because
I'm sorry, but the problem with that is that is all that we perceive. But there are infinite... levels that we cannot perceive and we cannot study because we do not know they exist. And so, you know, right. we have to be open to the fact that it might not be something that we have any knowledge of at all.
Yeah.
And we'll be led there gradually, not all of a sudden today, hey, you know, we're not ready for that. But slowly by slowly, those pieces will fit. Totally. Yeah. And I think for me in my life, I wasn't even able to consider two possibilities, let alone infinite. I mean, I was so far removed from infinite possibilities because I was just, I trained myself for those 22 years to follow, or those 39 years really, to follow one path that had been told to me. And it was really the opportunity to just open up to even more than that, that made that possible.
Well, thank you for the little digression, but yeah, so you sort of divulged this to Tanya, who probably wasn't terribly surprised that you had at least 1% that might be. Okay, but so where did that go? So,
well, you were still, Tanya, a little skeptical, right?
Well, yeah, I was certainly, yes. Well, I wasn't skeptical that you were gay. I was skeptical about whether you were being honest about being honest with yourself.
Right. And if this would end up hurting you more than I'd ever hurt you in all those times before. And so I moved, or I came back to Illinois where we had 2 more weeks together, and we were just open, and our first kiss came that week, and wow, I mean, after 22 years of not kissing anyone, seriously, not allowing myself that was such a shock to my system. It was just, wow. In a good way, but yeah. Just, I mean, I was spinning for so long after that. But at the same time, just hours after that experience, when Tanya and I were away from each other, just talking with other people and realizing how clear my head was and how clear my thinking was in a way that it hadn't been in years, if not decades, just because I was true to myself. Awesome. And that continued and has ever since, you know, all these things that just, I couldn't think, I couldn't function, I couldn't work. And all of a sudden I was just complete. And so I told Tanya that I wanted to go to the temple one last time with my parents before I came out to them and really came out to the world. And so she just, like, you know, I mean, this is one of these amazing things, because I was always taught that gays are deviants, right? I mean, as we all were. And yet we maintained that law of chastity together just perfectly until I could go to the temple one more time with my parents. And in that space, and I talked about this a little bit in the teleconference, but in that space in the temple with my parents, I knew that it was right to be with her, to serve with her, and to bring the same kind of experiences at the temple to the world. And we got engaged and had that year apart, which was a perfect year. Tanya was in Boston doing the work and just fulfilling some of her dreams while I was at a complete, almost complete standstill professionally, having time to work through all of this. And, I mean, it had been so many decades of lying to myself and trying to structure something. And so I took that whole year just kind of limping by with my teaching at school. And, you know, I was teaching a college class. And
in Illinois.
In Illinois. and hardly doing any work except tremendous work on myself and on my healing. Mm. And so it was an important year coming out,
but so
resigning
meanwhile,
my...
The 1% chance that you're lesbian suddenly... was a little more than 1%.
That was just that was the crack that opened the door. Yes.
So it went swiftly from 1 to 99 or whatever.
Yeah, since it had always been 100%.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so do you want to, I mean, you described a little bit in the other podcast about the experience going to the temple, but would you mind just doing that again for our audience?
Cause yeah, not a problem. I came out to my mom before we went to the temple. My dad was golfing, I think, and my mom was ironing a dress. And I went in and I said, "Mom, I need to tell you something." And I don't remember all of the details, except I know I had planned this just every detail. And I said, I think it was probably something similar to, "Have you ever wondered if I was gay?" Or something like, I know what it was. "I'm one of those people the church calls as someone who has same-sex attraction. Did you know that?" And she, you know, I've wondered, you know, and so we talked about it and, you know, we went to the temple. She was very loving. Very loving. And I said, "Mom, I can't even stand being a foot near a man. I just don't like the smell. I just, you know," and she's like, "Then you really have an issue there if you can't, you know, be that close." And, and so they knew Tanya because Tanya had been my close friend for all these years. And Tanya had actually even been to Utah and met them, and they loved her because who can't love her? And so I said, "You know, Tanya, you know, I have had feelings for her. We haven't really done anything. I want to go to the temple and have one last opportunity to feel this. I'm going to start going to other churches." And I think it was harder for my mom, the idea of me leaving the church, than being gay, because she knew the latter. But, you know, she has a firm testimony, and that was so hard for her.
Yeah.
But yet she's always been nothing but loving, and talks about how, you know, Christ teaches us to love. And I just have the most amazing mom, the most amazing family. What a rich thing to have their love. Even if they don't completely accept all of it, they completely accept Tanya.
Yeah.
And, so that's all wonderful. But anyway, we went to the temple. She held my hand during the session. Afterwards, we sat in the celestial room together, and she said, "You know, I can't keep this in too long. You need to talk to your dad tonight." And so I talked with my dad that night. We ate. It was one of those dinners that was hard to eat again, and sat down, and it was really hard for him, and I think still is in many ways. But again, he's been nothing but loving. And fast forwarding, they were at our wedding that following May. This was in September that I came out to them. We were married in Boston, Cape Cod, in May. They were there, and they said, "We want you to understand, we believe marriage is between a man and a woman, and that's God's way, but we love you, and we will be there to support you." So... yeah, I don't know what else to add at this point. Anything,
well,
Tanya?
So it sounds like there was a 2-week period where you opened up the door, but by the end of 2 weeks you were engaged. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, it was. There were two engagement moments.
Yes, that's true.
Okay.
And one was the day that they announced Prop 8 as unconstitutional, the California court.
Uh-huh.
And we happened to be, there was a place that we taught together, and it's a very beautiful spiritual place. It's a home, it's a mansion in Bloomington, Illinois. And we were there working. We went up to this top ballroom area with the light shining in. It was just radiant. And we both felt so together in that moment. It was this day of celebration. And I'm sitting here thinking, I want to get on my knees right now and propose to Tanya. And I didn't dare. And so at that moment, Tanya drops to her knees And
there was something in the air.
Right. And I'm sure if I, you know, had followed my instinct, we would have just dropped at the same moment out of the blue. And so she gets on her knees and I said, "You don't get down there by yourself. We are equals. I'm getting down with you."
Okay.
And so we got down together and she I can't remember what you said, if it was, "Will you marry me," or what, but obviously, yes. I mean, there was never a doubt from the moment really I came out. I mean, we had been so close for so long.
Yeah, over 3 years.
And had every intention of spending the rest of our lives together, even if it was completely weird. I mean, we just were so close, and there was so much that was good, even if we weren't married, you know.
Yeah.
So, I don't know if that's a good way to say that, but we knew. We always knew.
Yeah.
And so it was not really a surprise. It wasn't like, "Oh my gosh, you love me." You know, that was so obvious.
Right. Right.
And so then the other time was as I walked out of the temple that last time, so full of spirit, so full of light, so full of love for Tanya, so full of knowledge, divine knowledge that this was right for us to be together. And I called her on the phone and said, "Will you marry me?" You know, so there were those two times. So then we just started planning the wedding. And
but I'm still impressed how quickly it went from those 1% to really fully embracing it. I mean, it sounds like...
Well, yeah, I knew. I mean, it was the 1% was just me saying words because we both knew.
Yeah, I think, I was just going to say the same thing. I think that was Karen's way of kind of starting the conversation. She already knew that she had, I think she had accepted in herself that she was gay, but she was afraid to say it. So that was a kind of way to open the door.
Well, it has to settle in, even after you accept
it. Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us today on Gay Mormon Stories. To discuss this episode with others, please check us out at gaymormonstories.org. If you want to see this podcast continue, please consider making a monthly donation, again at gaymormonstories.org. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer Mormons. Music for this podcast was donated by George Parkinson and Kelly Clark Parkinson. My sky.